Welcome to the Dog Trainers Podcast,
a podcast created by dog trainers for dog trainers or anyone who's ever fallen in love with man's best friend.
My second question for you is window theory. So like, you know, I've learned so many different models and ideas and thoughts and stuff like that. But when I heard the simplicity of window theory, I mean, I've been using it for the last 3 months. I've been using it to help give my clients like realms to think in, right? And so even when I assign them stuff, I'll give them a sheet that has windows on it. And I say, so your relax work this week is blank. Your work stuff is blank. Your play stuff is blank. And so I'm just going to assign you two or three windows every session, and you're going to show me the progress. And it's really helped get people to be more involved with their dogs. It's really helped people feel that they're able to put things in its proper boxes, because technically they're in boxes, right? But would you say, is this something that a newer trainer can pick up and understand right away, or does there need to be kind of years of fucking it up?
I think people get it fast. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, because it's super simple.
Dude, the first lesson is literally just like, there's four words. Most people go into so mm-hmm. much fucking shit and overwhelm people mm-hmm. so hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yep. And I'm like, look, there's four, we're going to learn four words. There's the word mm-hmm. we're going to name each of the windows. Right. So like, mm-hmm. okay is what we're going to call, these are generic words. Yeah. I usually like to teach foreign languages, but like the placeholder word. Okay is the go find your own fun. Ready mm-hmm. means we're going to play, and right. enough means be fucking chill.
Relax.
And then I'm going to mm-hmm. teach a non-geographic stay, like a non-positional stay, a geographic, not a positional stay. So just mm-hmm. like, if I put you on a bed and say stay, you stay on the thing. If I put you on a bench and say mm-hmm. stay, you stay on the thing. If I open a doorway and say stay, you stay at the threshold. So I teach it on right. objects and at mm-hmm. thresholds.
And by mm-hmm. non-positional, you mean sitting, standing,
I don't
whatever.
Give a shit. It's right, like, right. this yeah. is another problem I have with people in their dog training is people don't say what they mean, and they don't mean what they fucking say. Mm-hmm. And they mm-hmm. leave dogs to interpret what they actually meant mm-hmm. and right. they're good. Mm-hmm. And so they interpret mm-hmm. very correctly, very often, mm-hmm. which is cool and good on the dog. But the problem with that is when they interpret incorrectly, people go, you're being disobedient. And now we go pressure because you know, and you're fucking being disobedient. But the problem is the dog doesn't know. They're fucking guessing 90% of the time. They're just guessing right. Because genetically, that's what they were designed to do. They were trying to guess what these cavemen were fucking talking about with their grunting and shit.
So that's something that I've been working with very recently with my assistant trainers. And I'd love to get your thoughts on this. I had this thought, like, this is something that I want to make into like a quick, like TikTok or Instagram video, just to keep content up on the, you know, on the stuff. Was sometimes I feel like trainers, be them newer or whatever the case, you know, they're such good dog handlers that it overshadows training, meaning it overshadows your ability to teach this dog what they need to learn. And what prompted me was, I have an assistant trainer here. She's my most experienced assistant trainer. And she was working place with a dog. It's a 4-month-old Samoyed puppy. And it was going well. It was like 20-foot recalls with a long leash to place. Okay. The dog, she puts him in a down on the bed because, you know, place.
Well, that's what we'll go back to that because that's one of the things I'm talking about.
Sure. And we can talk about like why and everything. But so my point being, so he starts to get up, like he starts to move before she released him. Right. And she quickly, like her reaction is to, she's on this corner of the bed. He's getting off on the other corner. Like, you know, so she rounds the corner of the bed real quick to like get in his way and says, nope. And he lays back down. And I'm like watching her do this over and over. And I'm like, hey, you know, so I stop her and I'm like, why don't you do me a favor? I don't need you to be fast. Like if he gets off the bed, fine, put him back, like tell him place and put him back. But my problem with you, like getting in his space and stopping him is I know it's going to work. Like I know it's going to stop him getting off the bed, but is it teaching him what the word no, is it teaching him the expectation of place, or is it just stopping him just because even if you didn't say a word or even if he wasn't on a bed? If you get in his face, he's going to stop and probably lay down.
I mean, like that gets into an association thing. So like if you say no and then enact whatever the procedure is, it doesn't matter what procedure you used. Mm-hmm. If the mistake marker precedes the correction process, then they're going to know, like every time you mark that, I get corrected. And when I say corrected, I mean literally made to be corrected.
Just made to do the thing.
I don't mean booted. I mean, to me, body pressure, a leash pop, a thump on the nose, and a food lure are all the same thing. You were not correct, and now you are. I have made you correct again. You know what I mean?
But the reason why I said was because, you know, I work on this principle that was like newer for me. I know a lot of people are doing it like too, as it, you know, and I just learned it from other people. Of course, I used to train like years ago, like most people do, like all at once. Like you would say sit and pick your hand up all at the exact same time, right? Mm-hmm. Versus I've learned to kind of separate, like sit, then you move down, then you move.
You have to.
So of course I 100% agree. Like if you condition the word no, then the dog's going to understand that whatever the reinforcer is, whatever the motivator is, food, social pressure, like I couldn't agree more. Right. My problem was it her knee jerk reaction was to go at the exact same time. It was like, no. And she was already near the bed, just on the other corner. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like, so what I was working was, I don't want you to just jump in his way. I'd rather you say no, then go. And my point was like, if he gets off because you're saying no and then moving, so there's like this extra time. Mm-hmm. If he beats you off the bed, don't feel like you have to like race him to stop him. I'd rather him understand the word no, because if he gets off, you can still correct him in some other way, right? You can either...
You know what I mean? So like you say exactly no, right. And you fucking walk up the line and you get the dog, you put it back. Like you don't have to run. That's my point. Huh? Be cool.
Right. And then once you say no, once you've marked it and given it its space to like breathe... Now you can correct in whatever way you see fit. Like you said, you can e-collar, punk, whatever, or food or social, like however you do it. But the reason why I really like to point this out to them whenever I see them working outside, and lately I've been recording so they can like watch it later, you know, is they do it and I see her catch herself. Like she's saying no already having moved. Like it's just a reaction, right? I'll run a few reps with the dog right then and there, not like later after more conditioning. I'll say the word no, then move, do it again, say the word no, then move, do it again, say the word no, I haven't moved yet, and the dog fixes the, you know, and that's what I was looking for. I want them to learn the word no, as opposed to just reacting to me jumping into their face.
I mean, there's a bunch of stuff, interesting, it depends on how deep you want to go. Like, there's the idea of, like, the timing between the mark and the consequence,
right?
Whatever that is, mm-hmm. negative or positive reinforcement, doesn't matter. Like, there's the mark and the reinforcement, so whatever.
Right.
Like, there's the timing of it. There's giving a space so you can have differential reinforcement based on effort. Because if I go, uh-uh, and you fix it, there's going to be a dip. That's a different criteria than if I go, uh-uh, you don't fix it, and I have to help you fix it.
Right.
Like, but if I don't give you a chance, if I go, ah, and I just immediately start to fix it, you never have a chance to show me, hey, I'm going to fix it on my own.
Right. That's exactly what I was. Do you know what I mean?
To redeem yourself.
Like that. Well, and I feel like I need to give them a gap so I can, I need a discrimination period. Yep. Most people don't understand the importance of a discrimination.
Yeah, it's huge.
Like you need a. Hang on a sec.
Sure.
Don't. She's got three legs now, so she's like, "Take me downstairs."
Oh no! I'm surprised you guys can't hear the snoring Dane behind you. I hope you can't hear him.
But anyway, so like, you need a discrimination period so you can know what's going on. Like most people skip the discrimination period, and I think that's a fault in learning. So,
yep.
I couldn't agree more. And not only would I agree with you in like, you know, like I'm a balanced trainer. I use different tools and food and everything else, of course, social pressure and whatnot. But I do tend to believe that there are way too many trainers out there that are like too heavy and with tools, like with punishers. And I don't think it's obviously, I doubt it's like in any way malicious. It's more just they don't give the dog a chance to make a choice. Like that's how I word it to people is say the word no. Let's see what the dog's going to do with this information. And then you play off of that decision. Because sometimes, like, generically, at least when I heard it, the gap between a marker and a reinforcer, again, be it positive or negative, right? The time difference that I heard was somewhere between half a second to 1.5 seconds was, like, the optimal, you know, like, span of time. However, lately I've been doing something that I kind of learned in a weird way from Tyler Mudo was... there are times where I'll give the dog like a decent chunk longer, like 3-4 seconds. Because, like, for example, so like if I recall a dog on a long line, a place or no place, whatever, like even if they're not in position, just walking around the yard, there are times when I'll go, you know, Mackenzie, come. And the dog has this moment. We're talking like a good while, like 3-4 seconds, long enough that most other trainers would have already, nope, come, right? And I can see her thinking, looking this way, that way, this way, that way, and then choose to go. at which point I start like, good girl, you know, and start picking up that, you know, making it more worth the decision, right? Like reinforcing the idea that this was the right choice here, and I'm going to show you by making this more valuable to you. And then there are times where I'll go, Mackenzie, come. And she thinks about it, and then chooses to go the other way or lay down or something. And I say no, but I don't follow through. I don't correct in any way other than saying the word no. And then I give her another chunk of time. And she goes like, Mackenzie, come, think, nah. And I say the word no. And then she goes, think, okay, go. And that, again, took another, like, between asking for the recall, it took like 5 seconds. And then saying no, I gave her another. So we're talking a long ass time with no actual like follow through. And she still chose to make the And so, like, that's what I've been working with my staff. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Like, giving the dog time to make decisions, I think, is the latest thing that I've been kind of evolving.
So it depends on what you're doing. It depends on what you're doing, because I wouldn't do that with my recall, because I don't want my recall to be a cognitive, economical choice. I want my recall to be a reflexive response, at least the initial part of it. You know what I mean? Like, you can't cover 100 yards reflexively. No dog is running 100 yards and going, oh my God, my feet are moving. How's this happening? Like, that's not,
right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But we have like what I would call behavior inertia, right? Like, inertia is things in motion tend to stay in motion unless acted upon by another force. Things at rest tend to stay at rest a little bit, right? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So then the idea is if a being is already in an action, they have inertia in that action. The hard part is getting them to shift. Once they're shifted, it's easier to get them to keep going the right way. So if your recall is this cognitive, I hear what you said, let me think, what am I sniffing? What do you have? What reinforcers are possible? Am I wearing my e-collar? Do you happen to have food? How good is the smell? Let me see, let me act. They're dealing with a lot of cognitive issues and evaluation of fucking economics that I don't want involved in that decision. I want a reflexive when I go come. I want them to have a reflex redirection of focus and beginning the first. I want the flinch, turn, and take a step to be reflexive. And then after that first step, they can totally, nobody reflexively recalls 50 yards.
Sure.
But once they've taken two steps and then they start running the economical valuation of what do I get for what I just left, they're already three steps into a full sprint. And now it's like inertia says, just fucking do it.
Right, does that make sense? Everybody jumped off the helicopter.
Like, yeah, just like, just go, fuck it, let's just go. Because one, he's going to pay me like a motherfucker, and he's probably going to let me go back and do this thing anyway, so fuck it, let's get both.
Which is exactly the idea that people have behind place, right? Like I've always wondered.
Well, here's the thing with your place. Let me ask you this, though. Why the fuck do you down them if you put them on place?
Well, see, so actually I've been separating myself from that too. So like I have place cots, like the, you know, like the little,
of course,
the ones that breathe and whatnot, but we built some position boxes just made of wood.
Sure.
And I couldn't explain to you as to why because I really don't know, but.
Because it's tradition.
But, yeah. No, not that. I couldn't explain to you as to why, but lately the thought just came into my head, like, why not just leave a dog standing?
Who cares? You know, well, what's the criteria, bro?
Well, here was my thought, but you know, before the, like, was why everybody else teaches place in a down. From where I've heard people explain it is, like you said, you know, the inertia of motion, and if you put a dog in a down, physically, when you're in a more relaxed state, mentally, there's more buy-in. Like it's like saying
you're gonna fix your picture. If you want a dog on place and you down them, they're more likely to stay on place in a down because now they have to get up off their down and blah blah blah. But my point is that's not what you meant. So now you're gonna fuck up. I'm not bagging on you, but now people that down on place are gonna fuck up their down, because if the dog is in a down and rolls over onto its back and gets up to a sit and then goes back into a down, and you've told them place, but you said place, but then you said down, because we always down on place, right? But if they keep the criteria of place, as in they did not even begin to step off the place board, but they shift into and out of the down picture on the place board, what do you say? Do you say anything about it? Do you correct them for their broken down? Of course not, because you didn't mean down, you meant fucking place.
Right.
You just said down to you. It's like the fix the picture, but not the problem. You fix the picture of place by downing them on a place board, but we're not actually teaching them place. We're teaching them a bad down, because if they break it and we don't fix it, what does down mean? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if they can, if I say place and then I say down and then they get out of their down and I go, whatever, I don't care. And then later in an open field, I say down, you're expecting a dog to discern when dad makes this sound and I'm in an open field, there's a different set of criteria than when I'm on an elevated breathable place cot. Like, that's a lot of interpretation to put on a dog when there's pressure for making mistakes.
Right. No, no, no.
So for me, I'm like, look, if I'm going to teach you stay on the place,
would you free shape no, that man. Down?
No, absolutely not. I'll lure. I don't give a fuck.
Just have them stand.
I would put a dog on a place board. And in my mind, mm-hmm. I'm going to go, here's the word place means stay mm-hmm. on this object. Mm-hmm. And then, dude, I'm going to let you experiment. I'm going to fix the issue of you not knowing what this means. When you step off, I go, mm-hmm. and I guide you back up. Mm-hmm. And when you down, I go good. And when you sit, I go good. And when you stand, I go good. And when you spin a circle, I go good. And when you look like you're gonna, when you pick your foot up and you act like you're gonna step off, I say good. Mm-hmm. When you touch your foot to the floor, I go, and then put you back, good. Yeah. And when you take your foot off the floor, I go good. And you mm-hmm. learn very clear, everything on this side of the line is called good. Everything on this side of the line is called When I say mm-hmm. place, I mean exactly the same thing every time I fucking say it. And when I say down, I mean something totally different. And it's got a very clear set of criteria. I say exactly what I mean. And I mean exactly what I say. I don't say what I think will get the picture. I mean, most people, when they do this, they'll have somebody come up to greet and they look at their dog and they go sit and the dog sits. And they start to shake the person's hand. And then the dog goes, I don't think you fucking meant sit. And the dog lays down. And what do we do? We go, I don't fucking care because I didn't actually mean sit. What I meant was don't jump on this motherfucker. I said sit because if you're sitting, you're not jumping, but I don't actually care about my sit right now. I care that you're not jumping.
Right.
And the dog interprets correctly that we didn't mean sit. We meant chill. And they give us what we actually wanted, but not what we said. And then one day for no reason discernible to the dog, we fucking mean sit this time. And we go sit. And the dog goes, yeah, whatever, bro. I hear you. Uh-huh. I'll interpret. Me and my homies, we get the shit right most of the time. Yeah. And they do something, air quotes, wrong. And we go, hey, motherfucker, I know you know this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Come on, man. Like, so how do mean what you say, say what you mean. If you mean down, say fucking down. Yeah. If you mean place, say place.
And that's kind of like the birth of like the enough window.
Of course.
You know, like relax. Like just tell them what you mean.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. What's the question? Makes sense.
So my question is, how do you feel or how do you work with, there's that thought process as well. That's like, let's say you're working with some sort of positive punisher, like e-collar, prong collar, you know, whatever the case.
Okay.
And let's say that you have enough experience with it to kind of learn more or less how to minimize the need for corrections. And if you're going to correct, to minimize the intensity of that correction.
You're talking about corrections. You're talking about punishments. Because those are not the same thing.
Positive punishers, e-collar corrections, the positive punishers.
But you keep saying correction. Correction means make you correct. Punish means stop your behavior.
Okay, so to minimize the frequency/intensity of a positive punisher, okay, whatever that, you know, social pressure, prong collar, e-collar, there's that thought process that says the longer I let the dog indulge mentally in this thought, the harder it's going to be to pull them out of it.
Sure.
So you were asking me, like, do you always correct the dog? Like, if I put a dog in place and they lay down, because I too teach, like, well, at least, you know, like I'm kind of dabbling in not teaching a down, but like up until recently, place down.
Yeah.
You asked me if I would correct if they get up, and I was getting ready to say it depends. And the reason why I would say it depends is because sometimes I believe people are too quick to punish.
Sure.
And here's an example. Just my group class this morning, we put dogs in place. A dog gets up in the bed, turns around, lays right back down.
Sure.
I will not, like, I don't see the need to correct that. I have no problem saying that on the pod. Like, you know, so that's why I'm saying it depends. But however, if somebody, like, if I had a dog in place in my living room and someone knocks on the door and my dog very, you know, with like very intentful look, sits upright and maybe starts like under his breath, you know, then I'm going to correct that, of course, because not only did you break the down in a way that I would, you know, I would say is unacceptable, but it's more you're escalating.
So I would argue that is making the dog responsible for an awful lot of interpretation. And in a dog for whom interpretation can lead to bad things, I do not allow interpretation.
But
this is what the obedience window is for.
Right.
When, now get me, most people, again, they don't know how to teach the enough window. They don't know how to teach a dog to chill. So they use bad obedience. They go down, but what they really mean is chill. And then if the dog stays cool, but breaks its down, they go, okay, that's kind of what I meant. But that's making the dog not understand the dead criteria of down. And then you can't, you can either use a bad down to teach a relax, or you can use a real good down to teach don't move, but you don't get to use the same word to teach both. Do you know what I'm saying? But that's the problem. I want to have no interpretation. Cause when I tell a dog down, like if I have an axe murderer for a dog, like I like to work with gnarly dogs. If I have an axe murderer for a dog, I want zero interpretation. Now,
well, of course,
in the work, but I also don't put them in the work unless I need to. If he's good at interpreting, I would let him ride enough. When somebody walks in the door, I tell him, hey man, be cool enough. And he can walk around and make his own choices. And when he cycles up, he's breaking the picture of enough. Enough means chill. So if he cycles up, I'll go, because enough means stay chill. And if he starts failing to be able to make interpretive choices correctly in the enough window, that's when we go to the work window and I go down. And now there is zero interpretation because we're working.
Can I ask a couple clarifying?
Does that make sense?
It does make sense, but I want to clarify a couple things.
Sure.
So we're on the same page. You're saying correct as in fix, not correct as in punish. I get that, right? Just so that
correct
so
means that make them that I'm clear. Correct. Yes.
Right. So first question is, that makes total sense. Don't be inconsistent with your obedience commands is what you're saying, because I know what you mean. Like, especially with the sit and the dog lays down and people are like, eh, you know, because the dog's calm. So I get the inconsistencies there, but you also said, or it sounded like anyway, you agreed with me that if the dog kind of leisurely got up, turned around, sat, like laid right back down, you wouldn't address that.
In what? Because what matters to me is criteria. What is the criteria that I expect? Because if you break the criteria, I'm going to get you back into the criteria. And when I say correct, I do not mean hammer. I don't use physical pain as a training option. That's not in my bag of tools. Mm-hmm. Like, a little social pressure, a little spatial pressure, a little leash pressure, maybe a lure. You know what I mean? Like, get them back in. It's like, get them back into
get them back on track.
Correct picture.
No, I hear you. Do you know what I'm saying? Correct versus punish. I understand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, punish means knock it the fuck off. Like, correct means, hey, buddy, get back in line. You know what I mean?
No, I get you. I get you. Like, it'd be like if the dog broke place and I just put back.
Of course.
I corrected the behavior.
What I'm saying is I always correct the picture. I can't ever let my dog not be in the correct picture. So I'm always going to correct the picture. So I can only correct a picture that you've broken. So what's the criteria? And this is the problem. When we start talking to trainers and you're like, what is exactly specifically your criteria? They go, I don't know. I can't explain it. Well, then how the fuck do you explain it to a dog?
I think you just answered my second question, but I'm going to verbalize it just in case.
Sure.
Just, you know, so my question was going to be, you correct, not punish, you correct for breaking criteria. Now, if I'm getting this right, criteria is just, it's just different from most typical training's criteria. It's not a position.
Criteria is just the word that means what is expected of you.
Right. But what I'm saying is what you're choosing to correct, which criteria. And in your particular case, it's not like the dog broke my down and got up to a sit that is breaking my criteria. Your criteria is more like, are you in the appropriate window at the appropriate moment? I'll correct that.
No. Whatever, everything has its own criteria. So down means elbows on the floor in a sphinx position, facing this direction, looking at me if possible. You know what I mean? Like, don't move, don't adjust, don't army crawl. You're in this spot facing this direction, sphinx position, right? Means be in this geographical area, irregardless of what position you are in, be affixed in this area. So I can put that, I don't use the word place. I'd put them on a place board and say stay. You know what I mean? Sure. But stay just means
same thing, different word. Yeah. So I guess
motherfucker.
My next question to you then is like, how strict with those? Like, so for example, if
I'm extremely strict in the work.
I understand. But like, so in the work window, I get not all the time. Like, I'm just trying to be clear is so let's say you're currently working, right? And you've put a dog in a down, which means face this way, like this and this.
Yes.
Strict to the point to where if the dog like lightly shifts or scratches
100%. Absolutely. Oh, okay. Absolutely. But not, that sounds dickhead, but my dog is, dude, for me, obedience is fucking the video game, Simon Says. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
If I say Simon says, touch your toes, and the kid touches his head, do you go, ah, fuck it, close enough, bro? No, you go nope. Do you know what I mean?
No, like, I hear you, because I look at it like I was
Simon didn't say, bro.
Like a basic training. It didn't matter what you were doing. Like, they have us do a lot of things that make no, I mean, they don't make no sense, but it doesn't really matter. Like folding your shirt exactly this way and your cot exactly this way. It was more just, it was teaching people the ability and the value of feeling a sense of stress because they apply it, and still being able to focus on exactly what I said, exactly how I said it, and not let these other factors get in your way.
For me, obedience is Simon Says. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's a game I play with my dog. And if they can get it just fucking right, they unlock the box to get to awesome shit. So they mm-hmm. get mm-hmm. to the play window or the okay window through the conduit of the work window. Mm-hmm. So if I go like down, my dog shouldn't be like, fuck, man, I have to down. They should be like, oh, hell yeah. Here it is. I'm like, game on. And they're like, now we got to play a little game of Simon Says, touch your toes, touch your head, spin around, and you do it all right. Mm-hmm. Boom, the tug toy comes out. Or you do it all right, and I go, boom, go chase the rabbits. You know what I mean? Right. And they open those two windows of opportunity for drive expression through the conduit mm-hmm. of the work window. So I'm super fucking strict. Like, how strict is a video game? If you touch the landmine in the video game, does it go, ah, you tried, kid? No, the video game is dead fucking strict. How strict is Tetris? So when I say I'm dead strict, I don't want people to go, man, he's a hard ass in the work window. I'm not.
Right.
My work window is a video game. But how strict are video games?
Yeah.
You get three lives in fucking Galaga, dude. That's all you get. You don't get four because you tried wicked hard. Like, you get three lives, dude. That's all you get.
No, I hear you. I think essentially what you're saying is something that I noticed, like, dogs aside, just in people in general, is people these days can conflate being strict with being like
a dick.
Or a dick. Right. Whatever you want to call it. Right. So I get what you're saying is you cannot, and you're a coach, and you're like, in all these kinds of ways, you teach people. So I understand how you fully understand the value of being strict just to make sure someone gets it right. I totally understand why you keep correcting me for saying correction when I mean punisher. Like, I think I'm getting where you're coming from. I was just looking for that clarity of like, okay, so if a dog does X, you fix it. And here was my confusion, was it didn't seem like something that would work super well to me if you were punishing, but you're not. So if it's like, if my dog went from laying like Sphinx like this to shifting to the side, and I go, nope, boom, with an e-collar, that's not going to work out. They're going to get up and freak or whatever. So, but if you're not using punishers, like official, you know, like actual punishers, then I can see why that works. So, okay, so I'm making sense of it.
But here's the thing. In the work, I'm extremely strict in whatever the criteria is. So when I say in the down, it's a Sphinx and blah, 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 blah. That's because my down has a very, very, very strict set of criterias. But I would never leave my dog in a down for 8 minutes.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I would go down and I'd drop my dog because here comes a dog and I don't know what's up. Here comes a person and I don't know what the fuck is going down. And I look at my dog and I go, you know what? I need you to be on. I go down, my dog drops. And now I go handle some business and I talk to the guy and I go, oh yeah. And I realize this conversation is going to roll for a little bit and I don't want my dog in a down. So I look at my dog and I go, stay. And my dog then flips over on his back and starts going like this because I just reduced criteria.
I
just said, hey, bro, you're no longer responsible for the down. You're responsible for stay. And now you can chill for a little bit.
You know what I love about the work, like just the windows in general, is the fluidity back and forth. And like that, you can go from a Sphinx position to a relax or to a stay or whatever. You just, you can, even within the same window, you adjusted criteria.
Dude, but that's the point. I mean? Like work has like each behavior has very, very distinct criteria.
But what I love is that the stay is still, there's some freedom.
It's a different thing. People hear me go down.
You know what I'm saying? It's base, stay still, but you have freedom within that stillness.
People will hear me when I say, like, I go down and then after 10 seconds, I'll go stay. And they're like, oh, I teach an implied stay. Yeah. And I'm like, me too. And they go, well, why'd you say stay? And I goes, I just reduced criteria. Like, I just told them, don't stress. Like, no, chill out, bro. Hang out.
I kind of look at it like, sorry, like I feel like the easy example that comes to my head that like an owner or a newer trainer would understand is it's almost like walking with your dog. It's the same sort of criteria, yeah. But if when the dog is in heel, there are like really strict criteria.
Yes.
Yeah. Versus if you release the dog, they're still walking with you, they're but free, it's now a different set of criteria.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely. But I love how like, and this is the thing that really gets me like about the nuances and the shifts, like the different variations of the same concept that you can have. And that's the beautiful part about your systems and the windows. And just understanding, and I can't wait. I mean, we've reached out to you to book you to actually come and train our staff, and we're going to see you later in the year. So that's super exciting. And one thing I want to touch base on, cause we're coming around the 2 hour mark here now. All right. One thing I want to touch base on is I had the pleasure of seeing you, in Irvine, when we interviewed Larry Crone, he was saying, yeah, I'm going to have an Irvine out there with J-Jack. And we were like, oh, I got to go see J-Jack too. So Mariano told me 2 days before the seminar was actually supposed to be, he goes, hey, it's this weekend. And I was like, oh shit, I've totally forgot. So I canceled my clients for the weekend. And actually, no, I ended up leaving halfway through, but I got the pleasure of meeting you, getting to meet Joel, getting to meet Larry. And I don't even know if Joel's told you about this, but he actually gave us permission, the Dog Trainers Podcast, to come and do outside coverage of like the experience of going to seminars, not actually covering the content, but talking about the experience of
people learning alongside you.
People learning and just new trainers who are, you know, spending their hard-earned money to go see people teach and learn, right? So that's why we're going to be in St. Louis. And so we're really excited about that. And I think it's really, really cool. And I'm bringing that up because what got you into seminar circuits? How did that whole thing start?
Man. Yeah, that was, fuck. Yeah. Okay.
Because you're a great orator. You're great. You're fucking hilarious to watch. And I personally would wish every young dog trainer who listens to this podcast to go see you do your set bit, whatever you call it, like whatever you call it, like it is not only, and I think the best form of entertainment or learning is through entertainment.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
and
yeah,
you are definitely the, in my mind, from a performance standpoint, you are the headliner of that.
You're easy to listen to.
Yeah. And you make a lot of sense.
Lot of sense, and you're very technical, but it doesn't feel heavy.
That's the real trick. It's like when I was saying with the dogs, like I'm super fucking strict, but they don't notice. They're like, this is the most awesome video game, right? Tetris is super strict, but you have fun. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that. Like I can get some pretty technical information in, but you don't leave going, God damn it. That was dry as fuck, man. That was so much science. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what I mean?
But you can go that deep too, and I've heard you go fucking.
Yeah, I mean, I can get into some shit, but I try to keep it where like
the first hour of our podcast.
We can get to it. We can get to that level, but you never feel like drowned in it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you shouldn't be like, fuck, dude, this is heavy. Like I think some people like the heaviness for the sake of it being heavy. So you leave with this like, woof, man, that was a lot of shit.
Well, I just
Well, is that where Blake got the idea? Like I know that he works very heavily based on your system of windows. But he was talking about something with us. I forgot if he said he got it from you or wherever else, but failing safely. Kind of giving
I know the concept, but I don't think he got it from me.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay. That
was, I mean, maybe he did. I fucking don't know. Who knows? I don't know. Who
knows? Well, I'm asking because as a mixed martial artist, like practitioner and at one point like professional and now coach and all this other stuff is like, you know, and I'm not joking. I'm being super serious, but just like as an older person who just has more experience in general and can see the mistake. I'm not trying to be like,
holy fuck, dude. How old do you think I am, bro?
No, I'm just saying like
that's a first, man. That's the first time anybody's been like, as an older person,
you're just older than
me. Wow. Because I don't think that you're like an old person. I think that you're older than the majority of dog trainers that maybe go to seminars. So you're like the older person. Sure, you know, that can be. And
you're going
to
catch an
older guy jiu-jitsu.
What's that?
So you're going to catch an old guy jiu-jitsu. All right.
But what I'm getting at is like something that we talked about in the very, this was either the very beginning of the episode or it was like before we started recording, was you were saying something along the lines of like, people are in need for people who can like explain, like you know, like I've heard it before in different ways, but essentially like people need examples. Like nobody's going to be more beneficial for, I don't know, hockey. Like it's not going to be the best player there ever was who's as influential. It's going to be the player who was good. He could still be the best. Like that doesn't disqualify mm-hmm. you, but who knows how to explain the experience to convey to other people that I get what you, like I've been through what you've been through. And that's what I meant by like older is
the, like the great, I'm not a great dog trainer. You know what I mean? Like I'm not a great jiu-jitsu player. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I do well, I'm good. You know, like I'm not like shitting on myself. Like I'm good, but I'm not talking because I'm like, look how badass I am. I'm talking because mm-hmm. like I can see the bubble over that dude's head and you can't. And I know if I can say three things the right way, if I can make the right joke, if I can make the right metaphor, if I can get you to think about this one thing and then circle back around to this idea, you'll go, oh shit, I see it now. You know what I mean? Like exactly I can translate well, you know?
That's exactly what I'm trying to say though. I feel like you can translate really well because you have this huge wealth of experience.
Oh yeah.
And again, this isn't like an old joke. It's not even an age thing. It's just you've done like, you've done all these different things. You've seen all these different things that most people like
you have perspective, man. You have perspective.
You've lived like, it's like Arnold. It's like you've lived a bigger life than most people do or will. No,
I hear you, man. Like the things that to me are normal, the things that like I'm just like, oh, this is just life. People are like, it's a movie. You know what I mean? Like people joke about it all the time. They're like, bro, you should, like, we'll talk about my childhood. We'll talk about my past. And people are just like, holy fuck, dude. Like that's a book. You know, what are you doing?
Yep. And I feel like you wield that book really well because you have all this information clear. Like we dove, whenever we did dive deep, like it was clear that you know what the hell you're talking about, like to a crazy mm-hmm. extent.
Yep.
But you also know, like you were just saying, when to dial it back, when to make it light with a joke, when to this and that. And that to me says life experience, not even necessarily a matter of age, just life experience.
Yep.
And that's what I was kind of getting at. And so for that reason, I'm going to have to disagree. I do think you're a great dog trainer because that's what most dog trainers don't have. Like I personally believe in technical dog training, like teaching obedience commands and all that good stuff. I think there's a shit ton of good dog trainers to great dog trainers out there. And yet you're something that everybody who we've talked to that's talked to you insists is like the next big thing. But this I think is why though. So I do think you're a great dog trainer, like as in great. And this is why, because you can convey you're one of those people who is not only like good, like above average, like good, you know, dog trainer, technically speaking, you're also like a, I swear, I'm not trying to be corny. Like you're also like a role model of a person, of your personality, of how you are and who you are. So like I can totally see why people like not only respect your understandings mm-hmm. and your technical abilities, but why they genuinely like you. And I agree. Like, bro, I like you. I'm so excited that we've had a chance to talk and I'm looking forward to meeting you. Like that's what I think makes you something special.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
No, I hear you. I always
he hates those compliments, man.
I'm not trying to make you like, it's not even, you know, it's
all right,
it's
all right, we'll stop. It's just we'll stop.
Thing. You want to fuck me up? Start giving me compliments or something. Then I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. We'll send you a nice little card.
Dude, come at me with a box cutter. I'll be all set. You start telling me I'm good at something. I'm like, no, man, go away. I can't handle it.
Have you looked into dog training lately? Because these days, it can be so confusing. There's just so many methods out there for dog trainers and owners who, frankly, just want to do what's right for their dogs. It would be nice if there was just something out there where you could learn about the best methods from real dog trainers who genuinely know what works and who believe in honest and open conversation with trainers from around the globe. If that sounds like you, then the Dog Trainers Podcast is just what you're looking for. Come and listen to Brent and Mariano as they educate you about all the different methods and tools you can use today. With absolutely no bias, just straight up information that can make you the best dog trainer you can be. Plus, you'll get the inside scoop from world-renowned trainers and so much more. Dog Trainers Podcast is a podcast created by dog trainers, for dog trainers, and anyone who's ever fallen in love with man's best friend. If all this sounds good to you, then check us out today by searching Dog Trainers Podcast on your favorite podcast streaming platform. We'll see you there.
There was a question about something.
Yeah. I'm going to get back to it. Don't worry, guys. I'm on track. You guys don't have to be. I'll be on track. The thing I want our audience to know is, like, if they wanted to see you, I keep trying to say perform, teach, give seminars.
Oh, no, that's what you asked me. How'd I get into teaching seminars?
Well, how'd you get into it and where could they see you?
Getting into it thing was interesting. Like, Chad Mackin really did push me out the door and say, you need to pursue this. Right. Like, I've been into
dog training and seminars,
wow, but wow. Dog training specifically, mm-hmm. Right? Like, I've been into dogs since I was a little kid. I knew how to work. I knew how to handle dogs. I knew how to handle pit bulls, mm-hmm. and I knew how to work mm-hmm. pit bulls. And I don't mean obedience in any way. I mean, like, fucking
sport.
The dogs work. Like, I could teach you how to fulfill and live beautifully with a game bred dog. Like, I could get you and your dog in harmony, but I didn't understand. I couldn't teach a downstay. I couldn't teach a loose leash walk. I fucking didn't know. But I mean, I would put your dog on a spring pole. I'd put your dog on a tug toe. I'd put your dog on a weight pull sled, you know, slap mills, whatever. Right. So I taught them how to work and handle their dogs. But I didn't, it wasn't a job. It was just people saw me. So the thing is, I've been in martial arts since I was a little kid. So every martial arts school I'm in, my dog was just my shadow. Everywhere I was, my dog was with me, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of funny because it was a little bit like who I was, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't understand you weren't supposed to have your dog just walk in a gym with you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like, I just walk in with my dog, but like, you know what I mean? Like, they know who my dad is. Like, what are they going to fucking say to me? my dad's out in the parking lot with a fucking Harley and a bunch of dudes. You know, like, what are you going to say, bro? This unfortunate karate instructor's like, I guess there's a dog in my gym. Okay. All right.
That's fine.
Okay. So whatever. But then it was like every gym I'm in has like 100 people in it. And they all see this fucking gnarly monster pit bull who's just cool. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you got to be careful with him around other dogs for sure. Like, he was a real pit bull, mm-hmm. but like lived with me seamlessly. And they were like, that's cool. How do you do that? And so it's always been, my entire life has been 100 captive audience people going, how'd you do that? How'd you do that? How'd you do that? So I've always mm-hmm. been the guy everybody asked to help, but it was just, mm-hmm. it was just a, oh man, just do this. It was just like intuitive. I wasn't, it's like the guy in the gym that helps people out with jiu-jitsu, but he's not like the teacher, but he's the guy everybody asks for help with their arm bars and stuff. You know, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was that, right? And I was pretty good, but I got way out of my depth. I got a dog. So people started bringing me dogs and they were like, how about this one? How about this one? And I would get more and more challenging dogs. It was just not intentional. I just wound up with them, right? I became mm-hmm. the guy that could take, became the guy that could handle those dogs. And, I got this dog that was just out of my depth. You know what I mean? I was fucked. I was like, oh no, I don't know what to do. Like, he fucking put me in the hospital a couple of times. It was bad. I was way out of my depth, man. And, not being the kind of guy that just like quits on things, I was like, okay, small world shit, right? I was like, I gotta figure this out. Like, I just retired from fighting too. So I was like, let me get my brain that I put on, you know, reading Grey's Anatomy when I was fucking 8. Let me put that brain on dog training now instead of fighting. Put it on dog stuff because I need to understand this. And I started really deep dive, like studying on my own. And there was this Balanced Trainers Forum. I don't even know if it exists anymore, right? Way back in the day. And Tyler was on it. And I got on that forum and started asking questions. And of course I got fucking hammered, man. People were just like, you know what I mean? Talking down to me and like, you know what I mean?
Sure.
All right. New blood kind of
Yeah.
Like we're the old guard, you're the new dope. And I'm cool, man. Because again, I don't get it. You know what I mean? Like we can fight and I'll break your legs. I don't give a shit. So what? Like laughing at the keyboard. I don't care. So like, well, I was just getting the information that I could. And Tyler actually on that, I was asking about a protocol that I'd been working on with one of my human aggressive dogs. And I was like, yeah, I've been working on this. I'm not sure. What do you guys think? Like, and people kind of went, cause it's not normal. And Tyler was like, holy shit, that's good. He literally was like, that's good. I'm going to steal that. I'm going to give you credit. He's like, but that's good. I'm going to start doing it. And having somebody in that position go, dude, that's valuable. Like that's really worth something. I made me go like, okay, maybe I'm not just some dopey fuck that's trying to figure this out. Maybe I actually do have, maybe not even like validate me, but like telling me I'm on the right track in my thoughts. I'm not sideways not in my thoughts. My yeah. I'm not thinking the wrong track. Right.
Right.
And he goes, you know who you should really talk to? There's a dude that my buddy, Chad Mackin, who's going to be in your area. He was in Boston. I'm in Maine. He's like, he's going to be in your area doing a seminar. You should hook up with him and ask him about that dog that you're struggling with. And I said, all right, cool. And I went to his seminar with my dog. And he blew me away with him handling my dog. Like he handled my dog and that was like, holy shit. Like he was good. And I was like, okay, fuck man. I need to learn from this dude. And he also like, I was wearing my Jiu-Jitsu Academy shirt and he does Jiu-Jitsu. So he trained with Jacqueline and in Texas, he trained with Jacqueline. And so he was a purple belt. And he's like, so you do martial arts, but not talking down to me because he's not a dickhead. But you know how, like, you've been in jiu-jitsu for a long time, you start seeing, like, wannabe tough guys with a jiu-jitsu shirt on, or I got some cauliflower here or whatever. But, like, meh, you know, I've been around and I have a decent name in that world, right? I have a decent reputation. So, I mean, I ain't fucking famous or nothing, but, like, I've been around a long time. And so he was like, oh, you do jiu-jitsu? I said, yeah, I do jiu-jitsu. And he was like, what belt are you? And I went, I got my black belt like in 06. And he went, oh, like, but then I don't think he believed me. He was like, oh, okay. Who'd you train with? Starts asking me questions, like trying to catch me. And I said, who do you train with? And he was like, I train with Dracolino. And I said, oh, cool, man. Drac's a buddy of mine. Tell him he still owes me money from that Denver fight. You know what I mean? And he was like, bullshit. And just texted Drac. And he was like, you ever heard of this motherfucker named J-Jack? Who is this guy? And Drac was like, oh, my God, man, that guy's cool. He's tough. Tell him I owe him that money still. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. Yeah, he was just being cool. He's being cool. And then Chad was just like, holy shit. Like in the dog world. Yeah. Chad was up here.
In game. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then he realized in the jiu-jitsu world, it was reversed, right? In the jiu-jitsu world, he was like, fuck, man, you've been around. Like, holy shit, you're the deal in jiu-jitsu. And so we would talk jiu-jitsu and dogs. And that was fine. But like, before we even have the podcast, I was like just attending his seminars. I was just going to his seminars to learn more from him. Every time I was there, he'd be like, because I'm good at explaining. So he would like, he's not an insecure motherfucker. I showed up and have a certain amount of charisma and a certain amount of whatever. And like, he would have me teach something if he thought I could explain it well. He's like, Jay's got a really good way of saying this. Jay, tell him. And you know what I mean? Like he'd share stage time with some fucking dopey kid that doesn't, I'm not a fucking trainer. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like that's a baller move. Like that's not a scared dude.
That's not a scared dude, right?
And so I was whatever. And then people would go, well, where's your facility? And I'd be like, oh, I don't have a fucking facility. And they're like, well, how long have you been training? I'm like, I don't fucking train. I'm not a trainer. You know what I mean? And one day Chad was like, yeah. So he officially just hung his shingle. He's a dog trainer. So that's what's happening now. And I was I guess I'm a dog trainer.
Yeah.
So
you didn't find the game.
I was like, I guess that's happening. You know what I mean? Okay. So I guess that's happening. And then we started doing the podcast together, just talking dogs and recording it. It was way back. Dog Training Conversations was like one of the first dog training conversational style podcasts around, you know? And we started talking, and then somebody was like, we talked about pit bulls, and Chad had me come out to one of his seminars and just do like a quick presentation on pit bull history or whatever. And somebody was like, hey man, can you come out and do that? Like, can you come out and do a, you know, do a presentation at my place? Like, do you just show up and do it? And I was like, I mean, I guess, you know what I mean? I was like, I guess. And I called Chad. I was like, hey dude, do you have a, like, are you cool with it? You know what I mean? Are you cool with me doing that? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. You totally should. And so went out and did that. And ever since then, like, I don't advertise. I'm not asking for stuff. You know what I mean? But like, fucking people just won't quit calling, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Man. I'm sorry, man. Had to book you. Had to book you.
Jesus. So yeah, I mean, it wasn't supposed to be a new career. You know what I mean? When I retired from fighting, I thought I was done with hotels and traveling and shit. And I'm like, fuck, man. Cause you can only fight like four. I mean, I used to fight like every month. It's fucking for a little while. I fought three times in a month once, but you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I mean, it was back in the day, but like, you know, high level modern MMA, like you're fighting 3-4 times a year.
Yeah. Like prize fighters fight like 4 times a year.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So like I'm traveling more now than when I fought, I'm like fucking traveling more. It's crazy.
Right.
It wasn't supposed to be a thing. I didn't try to make it. I don't have a dog training facility. Like I have a jiu-jitsu academy and I run dogs out of my jiu-jitsu academy.
I have two quick questions. Cause I know we have to let you go here pretty soon. Number one, this can be quick if you want it to be, do you do seminars for BJJ as well?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
So I've been doing jiu-jitsu for a lot. Well, so the difference is this, right? The difference is in jiu-jitsu, like I have a good name for sure. Like I have a good reputation. Like you can check my fucking references, make any phone calls you want to make. You know what I mean? Like I've got a good reputation. But like, man, I've never won the world championships. You know what I mean? Like I've never been a world title holder. Like I've got a good reputation. I had a good career, made a name for myself, but you know what I mean? Like on the seminar circuit in jiu-jitsu, do you know what I mean? Like you want to travel and make money and teach every month. Like you need to win the worlds a couple times, you know?
True.
So like I'm not on the radar. I'm too old and I'm too out of the game, you know? Like I haven't been competing. Like I retired from competition like years back. I've done a couple little comeback throwdowns just to do something. Like fucking, I haven't done this in like 10 years. Let's do something. But I'm not an active competitor anymore. And because I'm not an active competitor, you know what I mean? Like that is the realm of
irrelevance.
Yeah. Like I'm
assuming you have some, right? I'm assuming you have some current competitors at your school.
Oh yeah. We have some competitors. We have some fighters, you know, and now I'm not super into the sport jiu-jitsu world. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like we have a sweatshirt that says make jiu-jitsu violent again, you know, like I'm not a sporty dude. Like in my basic jiu-jitsu class, we're not talking about points and pulling guard. You know what I mean? Like we talk about fighting, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, when you're choking, they're going to try to poke your fucking eye out. So you have to put your head in this position to stop the eye gouge. You know what I mean?
And so that's with BJJ, just that with an emphasis on like, on the possibility for striking and everything.
Nah, I mean, you know what? Here's the fucked up thing. It's BJJ. Like I'm not the weird one.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? When you go look back in the early 90s when people talked about jiu-jitsu, dude, they weren't like, well, you know, the sport of fucking whatever, like it was about fighting. Right, it was about fighting. Competing in sport was the thing that you did to test yourself in between real fights, or like the thing that you did to get exposure. And like, you know what I mean? Like it was, it was fighting, you know, it was
fighting. Yeah. Still exists, you know, like I know that the Gracies were and are still like a very big voice of like, there is like within the Gracie system, even in the schools, like there is the sport training option, I guess you could say, like the different type of class. And there's the more realistic, simple, but not in a bad way, like this shit will work in a street fight for your life jiu-jitsu, like what it's supposed to be, right? Getting leverages on people to keep yourself out of harm's way.
The problem is this. The problem is way back when, and in my gym, it's still like this. The basis was learning how to fight. There was the basis of learning how to fight. Like it's too far, too close. There's manage the distance. There's like, this is what it is. This is about fucking fighting using the concept of jiu-jitsu, right? Jiu-jitsu as a strategy, but it was about dealing with fighting using jiu-jitsu as a strategy. Once you got a good foundation, you were encouraged to play the game of jiu-jitsu to keep yourself sharp and investigate all kinds of new possibilities that you can investigate without striking. You know, it's like a laboratory that you could play in. And through that type of play, you could discover new things that could be taken back to the concept of reality, you know?
Right.
But everybody that played the sport of jiu-jitsu had a foundation of fighting with jiu-jitsu and they would be absolutely willing. You could go into any school in the 90s and go, I want to fight that guy. And they'd be, no coach would be like, he doesn't really do that. He does jiu-jitsu. They would be like, take your gi off, bitch. You're fighting. And you're like, dude, we're fighting. You know what I mean? Like we're doing challenge fights. Like no question. So like everybody that played jiu-jitsu could also fight jiu-jitsu. The problem is now that's not the case. Now there are people who go, if playing at jiu-jitsu is the goal of the game, like that's what we're doing. Why are we doing this stuff that over here is superfluous? I'm not going to get in a fight. I'm not going to get in a challenge. I'm not going to do it. Like I'll just call the cops and hide. So like if, why would I spend 3 years of my fundamental practice doing a thing that to me in my mind is totally superfluous? And so they just begin with play of the game. And it's like, it's cool. Playing jiu-jitsu is fucking fun as shit, dude. I do it every day. But like you should have the background so it's not just fucking nothing anymore. Cause now there's men, there's purple belts and brown belts that'll get slapped in the fucking mouth and do nothing. Like there's guys that out there that are like, they're fucking purple belts in jiu-jitsu and they are petrified of fights, petrified. Like they will just put their hands in their pockets and get spit on and like not stand up for their family. And that is a fucking crying shame. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's a shame. Yeah. Like that's really sad. What's happened to the sport is what happened to the art is really, really sad. You know,
I can see the double-edged sword there because what happened to the sport also made it like more applicable to more people too. Right. You know, but I also can totally see where like, I quite like watching really high level matches like on YouTube or whatever, just to learn shit. But I can totally see why it makes no sense in a street fight. Like I really like watching the Miao brothers but I think Paulo Miao does this thing where they start the match, right? You touch up and then round starts and he immediately sits. Yeah. And I'm like, that would never,
if you walk into your house and somebody's doing bad shit to your grandmother, you're not pulling half guard.
No, of course. That's my point, though, is like I can see why it's not applicable to a fighting situation, you know, but it's just more technical, like the one variation of BJJ. And then there's the more like MMA version of BJJ, which is more simple and it's kind of more blended in with like with more traditional wrestling as well. And striking, of course, and all that other stuff. And like
That game has also changed, man, because like so, for example, the heuristic devices that work in jiu-jitsu don't work in MMA, like the valuation of positions. Right. So like in order of control, you go like side control, knee to stomach, mount, back is the pinnacle. In MMA, that is not the case anymore because you can't strike behind the head. So now when you go belly down, there's actually less available targets. Right. There's less submissions available. I mean, the rear naked choke is devastating, but we both have gloves, which makes chokes much, much harder to get.
Really fucking impossible.
So it's like you've reduced the amount of attacks, you've reduced the efficacy of the attack that remains, and it's harder for me to stop the fight from raining punches. So now the valuation of positions has been upended. Now it goes mount is the worst position, back is less damaging. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it's turned the whole concept on its ear. And if you get accustomed to MMA style jiu-jitsu and then end up in a bad situation, dude, you know what I mean? Like now it is a viable escape from the mount. We're getting real technical. A viable escape from the mount now is bear hug and hold and wait for the ref to stand you up.
Right.
Come on, man. Yeah. Come on, dude, bear hug and hold and wait for the audience to boo until the ref worries that he's going to get invited back and stand you up. That's your fucking strategy for getting out of the mount. Like, cool. You know what I mean? Like, no, man, like you should know how
to bring it back to dog training. Let's bring it back to dog training.
Here's why I asked in the first place. My initial question was like, do you do seminars in BJJ? Right.
Sure.
Is my next question was going to be in your dog training, like evolution, you started, you said with your pity, kind of just learning how to like coexist with them and in what like order, if that's a well-worded question, did you learn at what point did you start more meticulous commands versus
I see. Yeah, so it goes like this. I learned fulfill their biology and live with them well was like my whole life as a kid. Okay. Like that was the whole thing up until fucking I don't even know, like 98. or something, 98.99. I met Mandy and she had fucking not pit bull dogs. And I was like, well, now I'm in a pickle because I want to spend life with this person, but like I have a dog that will kill them and I don't know what to do with them because they're not pit bulls. So I'm like, I fucking know. And so I had to branch out and start learning about how to apply the concepts of biological appropriateness that I understood inherently with my pits to like, now there's a shepherd, now there's a chow, like, and they're not the same dog. So like I had to understand how to apply that concept across different breeds, and also had to understand like how I can affect their emotions. So then I started learning about emotional control and things like that. Like before obedience, there was like change how they feel. So like counter conditioning, desensitization, just, you know what I mean? Like dealing with the emotional understanding of structure in the house and hierarchies and how they affect behavior, you know?
Who were some of the people that just, if you were to name off lists, so for our audience, they could research or Google search those people that you pulled a lot of information from?
Fuck, man. Back then?
Sure, yeah.
Back then, so Cesar Millan was a big... beginning thing, but I ran into real serious issues. Like I tried to follow, because that was the guy that was out at the time. Like that was like, if you want to learn, especially like, I'm not into dog training. I'm into like, you know, that kind of like the fucking, like that shit, right?
Or whatever, yeah.
But I found issue with it because like, you don't see some of the behind the scenes stuffs, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and it's like, it just wasn't, it wasn't playing out. Like trying to learn about pack shit just wasn't playing out the way I wanted it to. And then I went, I was fucking with a little bit of obedience, but nothing crazy. Like nothing, like I was not good at it. And I always like disliked it. I was just like, it was that shit that they tell you to do if you're going to train dogs, you ought to know how to do it. But I was like, I hate it. My dogs hated it. It was stupid.
Okay.
But realistically it was Chad. Chad taught me about socialization and taught me about this idea of the layered stress model and the idea of trying to teach the dog how to make good decisions. Like I had never really been talked to about anything like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
He gave me a lens through which to look at dogs that changed everything for me.
Yeah. I like that layered stress model. Cause it's like a better hierarchy of humane dog training
kind
of.
Oh yeah, no,
you're aware of that list. Yeah. It's like, but it's like a better, more detailed way of looking at dog training.
It's super helpful. Like not necessarily the way that he trains, like the way that he used to work the leash deeply affected me, and like I definitely like credit him with the leash ideas that I have for sure. But like the way that he looks at dog training, like the way that he looks at living with dogs and the way that he understands like socialization and emotions in dogs was like, that changed everything for me. But I didn't really develop an understanding of precision or an understanding or appreciation of it until I started looking at Ivan stuff real deep, or like got a chance to work with him in person.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. And once I saw that, I was like, fuck. Okay. Like I was the missing window. Like I had these other windows, but then it was oh, now I understand what that is for. And he had a trainer's course. It was like a pet trainer course. That was like a 5-day long thing. It had to be like 2014 or something. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I think it was 2014, maybe 2016. I don't fucking remember. I have a terrible memory, but it was a long time. It was a fucking long time ago. And that changed everything. Like that was like, I had like an understanding. I had like this nebulous kind of like, I kind of was a good handler and kind of intuitively knew how to do some things. And I could grasp these different concepts out in the sky and be like, okay, this kind of makes sense, but I didn't have like a fucking box. And when I did that course, it's like he just like melted my brain.
Put everything in it.
I was like, oh fuck, now I can see things.
Yeah.
You know, it was like the Matrix.
It's just like you organized all your dots.
Yeah,
it
was crazy.
Like all the dots and information.
Two biggest influences, period, of all time, Chad and Ivan. Almost everything I say is from one of them, like guaranteed.
I love that.
Like with precision and play and science, it's Ivan. And then with leash handling and like the paradigm through which I look at dogs and like understanding this like kind of the construct that I look like the layered stress model and emotional content and like these concepts of like, you're not done training the dog till you can trust him at liberty. And like, just understanding of the dog as an autonomous being, like that paradigm that I look at dogs through, I got from Chad. Those are like the two main influences. Other than that, I've read every fucking dog training
book. And those are, two amazing,
totally and completely different and amazing at their own shit, but like totally different, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you're amazing at synthesizing information and putting it into that scenario. How many more seminars do you have in 2022 that you're doing?
I have the event calendar up right now.
I have no idea.
Unless you have more.
Oh no, I don't think we've updated that in forever.
Oh, okay.
Because Mandy said she just started booking 2023.
Sweet.
So I think we have at least one a month between now and
what are the dates?
Do seminars outside of the ones with Larry Joel. And Joel.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like that's like a new thing that started last year. Joel called me and was like, hey man, do you want to do like a weird, I'll show up. It's like fighting. I'll show up. You're like, hey man, you want to show up and talk? I'm like, I'll show up and talk. I'm like, fuck, what are we talking about?
Yeah. Well, anyone who listens to this episode, I mean, we're going to be in St. Louis in 2 weeks. So freaking show up, show up, buy a ticket.
I'll do joint seminars with those guys. Cause they asked me to, but then like most of the time I just do stuff on my own. I've done some with Chad before too, like a little split gig or whatever. Right. But yeah.
So for the one, the Joel ones, you have the dates up.
I do. Yes. Give me one second. So the dates for the seminars here with Joel Silverman, Jay Jack, and Larry Crone. Okay. So we have the one coming up here. It's February 11th through the 13th, and that's in St. Louis, Missouri. We've got April 29th through May 1st. That's in Orlando, Florida. And we've got August 19th through 21st. That's in Dallas, Texas. You can buy tickets on joelsilverman.net. Definitely, you guys. This has to be the most fucking worthwhile seminar you could possibly go to. I'd recommend it.
I pulled a lot from it. Are there any other seminars that you're doing?
And weird to present with other people. It's weird.
I mean, you could fill a room with 100 people and perform to them and teach them shit and provide a shit ton of value. So yeah, it is.
It's interesting. It feels more like a conference than a dog training seminar.
Yeah.
Cause like dog training seminars are like a few days of like, you dive deep on this one thing and like, you get to see this work. And it's not like that. Like I come out for like an hour, hour and a half. And then I come out like twice a day for an hour. You know what I mean? It's like, it feels more like when you go to a conference and there's like multiple speakers and you go see this guy and then you go in the afternoon and you see this other guy. But then at night, everybody hangs out and bullshits. It feels like a little mini conference.
That's the best part of.
Yeah, it was cool.
Of these seminars, it's cool. Is the hanging out at nighttime. So I don't know if you remember. So in Irvine, I was part of a little crew of dog trainers. There was about 10 of us, and we hung out late with you guys and Larry and everything. And I asked them, we have a group chat going on, and I said, hey, you got any questions for Jay Jack? So I got two questions from this group for Jay Jack. Okay. So number one. They do a lot of pack walking. Like they're more of the pack mentality type trainers, right? And so one of the things that they asked, he says, ask him how he would use window theory in a structured daycare program.
So yeah, okay. Because of the nature of the dogs that I like the most, like I like really gnarly game bred pit bulls. Like that's my gig. I like the bulldogs because of that. My perspectives are a little bit colored by the experiences that I've had in my life. Right. And the dogs that I like to work.
Right.
So I won't free socialize dogs. I won't let dogs free socialize unless they know easy enough. Look, leave it, come, stay, middle. And they understand the concept of safe places. If they understand all of those things, like if they have all seven of those things, I will let them socialize. But it is because I can orchestrate the experience and I can help teach language to dogs that don't understand language. Mm-hmm. And I can kind of navigate sticky situations, because the problem with dogs socializing are they avoid true violence with ritualized violence and threats of ritualized violence. Mm-hmm. Like that's just the nature of how dogs work.
That's a great way to put it.
But that's what it is. Like that's just they don't get to actual fucking let's kill each other, because there's this constant like poker playing. Like it's a call and a raise, right? Like somebody goes, all right, I'm going to give you some freezing, and the other one goes, I see you're freezing, and I'm going to raise you hard eye contact. And the other one goes, I see your hard eye contact, I'm going to raise you growling. And then eventually somebody goes, I fold. And then there's no fight because they negotiated, like, you know, mutually assured destruction, right? Like,
right,
if we get to the end of this ladder and one of us doesn't back down, we're going to get to a fight, and fights in nature are fucking expensive, and animals that are raised well and naturally and are not genetically predisposed to murder are like, they don't want to get to the end. They find fighting in its truest form aversive. And so they both kind of have mutually assured destruction, which helped them negotiate and used ritualized violence and threats of ritualized violence to avoid actual violence.
Right.
The problem is we bred bulldogs to not be averse to the fight.
And
it's not that they necessarily want to fight more. It's not like they think it's, some of them actually do find it enjoyable, but like even the ones that aren't like, I don't even want to do it. They're not averse to it. And we're finding now, like you look at modern warfare with terrorism and stuff, like when somebody doesn't have mutually assured destruction, if somebody's like, oh no, I'm blowing it up, you're like, well, how do you negotiate with that? Cause they're you know, I'll kill you. And they're like, yeah, okay. And you're like, fuck, you're supposed to say no, I wish you wouldn't. And then we're going to negotiate terms. Do you know?
Right.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
So if you have a being on the yard that is not averse to a fight, the entire communication system is broken because it relies on being averse to getting to the end of that negotiating ladder. So if the dog is not averse to getting to the end of the ladder, none of the communication system on the yard works.
Right.
Does that make sense? So
they all have to agree upon the same terminology concepts.
Have to.
Yeah, they all have to agree before you can socialize.
If I have a dog that is not averse to violence, when the other dog starts going up the ladder of communication saying, hey, we're getting closer and closer, they go, yeah, I don't care. And now how does that dog, if the dog wants to use stillness and a little moderate eye pressure to get the other dog to back off, and that dog's not averse to fighting, he won't read that as a thing that needs, I need to fold now. He just goes, yeah, I call, motherfucker, so what? And then we have an issue.
That explains a lot of shit back when I used to run a daycare.
If my dog has those words I listed, I can see him applying pressure. I can see a dog giving a cutoff signal. I can see the dog not responding to the cutoff signal because he's not averse to it. And I can go enough or leave it or whatever the appropriate signal is. He, because he has those signals and responsibility of those signals, complies to those signals. So right now I can now manufacture a social arrangement with that dog and prevent violence, but it's not based on his aversion of violence. And the cool thing is if I do that enough times, classical conditioning kicks in. If the dog makes a signal and I call leave it, signal one, signal two, signal one, signal two, eventually signal two takes on the power of signal one. If I clap, I snap my fingers and then say sit, and I do that 100 times, the dog will sit when I clap, I snap my fingers. So if the dog gives a cutoff signal and I cue leave it, and we do that 20 times in a row, eventually the dog doesn't need me anymore because the dog gives a cutoff signal. The dog leaves it preemptively because he knows it. I can reinforce that. And now I've taught a dog.
You're reinforcing the dog's marker.
Yeah. I'm now teaching the dog how to respond to a cutoff signal that he otherwise would not have learned. And now I can trust that dog to freely socialize because he understands cutoff signals. But
I
can't socialize a killer without those
there's always that limit,
or else I'm hoping for the best. Now, dogs, like normal fucking regular old Joe Blow dogs, you can totally put them in a yard and let them fucking figure it out. I'm not saying let them fight, but what I'm saying is like, they'll figure it out, dude. 99.99999% of the time, they'll fucking figure it out. They'll make little appropriate corrections back and forth. Maybe one will make a couple of bad calls, and then they'll have to escalate to, we touch each other, but we don't actually make grips. You know what I mean? And then they both kind of fold, and then they work it out, right? And you can run that shit with regular dogs. But if you put one dog in the mix, like any dog that's a good dog, like in my terms, a good dog, any dog that's a good dog, you have to teach them those words and then manage their socialization until they understand the system, and then they can freely socialize. So if that's one dog, teach that one dog. But if every dog on the yard is that, then you got to teach every dog on the yard that.
What are your thoughts on this? So I agree with everything you just said, and I feel like I've kind of done something similar like that. I have four dogs. One of them is a, he's a pity actually. And he, he's kind of to that point that you're explaining. Like, he's not averse to fighting. He was definitely like one of the more challenging dogs to train, because I got him like years ago and I was newer, you know. I learned a lot actually from training my dog. So where I'm at with him today is he doesn't like to social, like he doesn't enjoy being around other dogs except for my other dogs.
Sure.
However, he'll behave if I'm out there, but because he doesn't enjoy it, I don't do it.
Sure.
You know, and I've had people be like, well, why don't you ever let him, like, you know, and they're like, oh, well, is he gonna attack? I'm like, no, he'll be good. And they're like, well, then why don't you let him socialize? And I tell them, like, well, he doesn't like it. Like, he'll do it, yeah, but he doesn't simple. Enjoy it. So why would I make him grind this out?
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I would.
I got one more question after you're done with that.
What I was going to say was.
Two more, actually.
I 100% agree with that idea. My dog Mabel does not enjoy the company of strange dogs. And so I do not make her socialize.
Right.
Now, people can bring another dog in my gym. You know what I mean? And as long as that dog is under control, like, we're good. Right. Like, if Mabel's laying on her bed and that dog starts walking up to the bed, somebody needs to be able to call that dog away from the bed. Cause if that dog gets on the bed, she's going to kill it.
Because I have told her,
if you get on your bed, no one will fuck with you. This is the agreement.
Yeah.
You don't kill anything. Yeah. I don't let anything get on the bed. This is the deal we've made.
Right.
So, like, you know what I mean? She'll go in the office to ask for space. Cause I teach my dog safe places. Mm-hmm. I teach my dog deceleration zones because, again, a lot of fights occur. Nature gave dogs one way to ask for deceleration or to remove consent, and that's threats of violence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Period. So, like, if a dog is pestering another dog and they keep going and they keep going and they keep going, and then after a while the dog's, like, into it, right? Like, totally playing the rabbit, and then after a while goes, okay, I need a break, and the other dog keeps going, they'll turn around and go...
Yeah, they'll snip at him.
Like, hey, stop, motherfucker. Yeah. Like, I'm removing consent, motherfucker. Stop it. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
So again, if the dog is averse to fighting, it goes, oh, goodness me, I'm sorry, I've crossed the line. And then walks away. Mm-hmm. But if the dog is like, hey, why'd you snap at me, bitch? And then they fight, then it's no good, right? So I teach my dogs, like, if you go onto this object or into this space, like between my legs or in my office or on this pedestal or whatever, you will be left alone. And so now they have a way to remove consent or ask for deceleration. So I can show you a video of two dogs, like they previously had fought and they're playing. Mm-hmm. And then, like, one will play too hard and the other one, like, slips and falls down. Mm-hmm. And as soon as he falls down, the one that knocked him over goes, fuck, and runs into the office. Mm-hmm. Like, dude, but that's the calming signal. Is like, dude, I don't want no trouble. That was an accident.
Right.
And the other dog comes up and stands at the office door looking at him and he won't come out. And then after a couple minutes, the dog at the office door walks away. And as soon as he turns and walks away, this one comes back out and they start playing again.
Right.
But if I let them negotiate those terms naturally, it would have involved teeth and threats of violence and that would have gone into a bloodbath. So I have to teach them an alternative method of consent removal to make them safe.
Right.
You know what I mean?
To conflict resolution.
Have to. I love because that. Nature gave them fights.
Like fabricating cutoff cues on them.
You have to.
You know, like.
Yeah, there's no other way.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Second question. Okay.
I won a fucking prize for the longest one, though.
Yeah, exactly. Ask him what he considers the biggest success / accomplishment in his dog training. Yeah.
In my dog training?
In your dog training.
In your dog training.
Jack's.
Biggest success / accomplishment in dog training.
Well, okay. So there's two. I fucking made a dog sport that turned into an international thing. And that's kind of weird. Like, to be some fuck up kid from a trailer park to have, like, made some dogs. There's a couple of moments where I'm like, whoa, like, man, we fought at, like, the Tokyo Dome. We fought at, like, Putin's palace setup. You know what I mean? Like, Mandy went and had dinner with Putin after some fights that we did while he was in the audience, right? Like, shit like that. I wasn't supposed to do shit like that. I was supposed to be in jail in Louisiana. You know what I mean? I wasn't supposed to be traveling the world and fucking shit. I wasn't supposed to be doing stuff like that. GRC Dog Sports is kind of that thing, but that's not dog training. That's something else. Like, that's... Like that's not
like a lifestyle.
Yeah, culture. Like I did, but I'm very proud of it, and it has to do with dogs. Like I made a dog sport. I saw something in my head that didn't exist and made it a thing, and it actually became a thing, and that's kind of fucking cool. Like that's pretty impressive, I think. You know, to me, I'm always like, wow, I did that. Holy shit. But personally, with my own skill in dogs, like my own experience with dogs, and probably the most impressive thing is the dog that I have, Jax. Like he was the worst fucking dog. He was the worst. He was awesome. He was just such a fucking man. He was so bad. Like he put me in the hospital a couple of times, like hung off, like gripped my face, like
is
hung
it,
off.
Is this, the, is this the one from the stories you were telling earlier?
Yeah. Yeah. The, like he hung off my face. Do you know what I mean?
This is the one that Chad Mackin helped you.
Dude, I took him to a Chad seminar and listen, this is one of those learn how not to be an arrogant fucking dickhead. I went to Chad's seminar and this was, I had no name. Nobody knew who the fuck I was. I was just some douchebag, white trash kid with a fucking weird pit bull. You know what I mean? Like, and I was trying to get him out of his crate to get outside. And I'd already asked Chad. I was like, hey, listen, he's a fucking monster. And he was like, okay, nobody believes me. He's like, all right, cool, whatever. Like, we'll work him, blah, 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 blah. Okay, he's legit, but he hadn't had the conversation with me about Drac yet. So he didn't know that I'm an honest person. So he thought maybe I was like making it sound worse than it is. Right, and it was like a break and I had to take my dog out to pee. And dude, we're in the middle of a fucking seminar. There's all these people and there's all these dogs and he's a fucking monster. So I am like, I've got a like a 4 foot leash, but I've got it wrapped up to like 2 foot. And he is just like at everybody. We're like, I'm running a fucking wheelie out the door while he's snapping at shit. Right. Like it was bad.
Oh my God.
And I get outside and I'm trying to look around to go, but there's people everywhere. And I'm like trying to find where I'm going to go. And this woman who's like a pro goes literally says to me, I can't watch this anymore. Hand me the leash.
Oh, wow.
And I went, what? And she was like, you're making it worse. The leash is too short. And I said, I know that, but we have a math problem because you're standing 5 feet from me and this is a 4 foot leash. So like, it's going to be tight. You understand? So like, I don't know what else to do. I'm trying my hardest. I'm here to get some help. And she goes, give it to me. Give me the leash. And I went, are you sure? And she goes, yes. And she was holding an aluminum water bottle in this hand. Like one of those little sport water bottles. And she goes, give me the leash. And I went, okay. I was like, are you sure? She's like, I'm a professional. And I went, okay.
No.
And I hand her to the leash and Jax goes, whoom, and just launches at her. And he gets the water bottle, punctures it, poof, like put holes in it.
Oh. It's leaking out the side.
The water just goes out of his head. You know what I mean? And she goes, ah, and I grab the leash and I pull him back. So he's just thrashing this water bottle. And then Chad comes outside and goes, what the fuck is going on? And I was like, she said she was a professional. I don't know, dude. Listen, I came here for help. I don't know what I'm doing. So like, he was a dick. Like he was just out of it. It was just, he was not straight. I mean, he was tied to a fucking tree outside, like a crack house or something. You know what I mean? Like embedded in his neck. I mean, it was a shit story. He's got terrible genetics. He's just everything that could be stacked against him. Genetics and experience was all bad. Like it was just super fucked up.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And he was a handful, man. And I just,
is he still with you?
Oh yeah, no, he's here. Yeah. I have video of him, man. Like I'll take him to seminars now. And like,
that's awesome.
I got videos of him walking around seminars, loose, hanging out, people petting him and shit, playing with other dogs. Like it's still stunning to me when it happens. I'm still like, I can't fucking believe we got here, dude. Holy shit. Like, I can't believe this happened. Some of the people at the seminar I went to like a couple months back, it was in Vermont or something like that. I had been there. Actually, it was people that had been at the seminar where he punctured the water bottle. And so when we brought Jax out to work with Chad, he was like, everybody clear out, move out of the way. Like it's this whole, this dog's no joke. Like everybody get out of here. Like, you know, stand on the other side of the rail. And everybody was like, holy fuck, what are we about this? Like he was a killer, you know?
Right.
And then there's this dog, there's people at this seminar and there's dogs walking around loving on him. And they're like, hey, whatever happened to that dog you brought to Chad's? And I was like, that's him. And they were just like, right, what? And I went, yeah. And then they got like, I was like, don't get all squirrely, but you know what I mean? They were like, I can't believe like whole dog's life was changed. It wasn't like, that wasn't a title. It wasn't like a competition I won. It wasn't like a ribbon I got. It wasn't like an accolade or anything. Like nobody will necessarily see or know, you know? But like,
mm-hmm. But it was a victory nonetheless.
Dude, I changed that dog's life. Like that dog was destined to be dead. And like he is now 11 and just going to run out the clock and have a fucking badass life. Like that's pretty cool. You know, I was pretty excited about that.
That's an amazing story. We know it's getting late over there and we want to close it out. So I just
hold on real quick. I had two more questions. Sorry. Just keep them short. All right. Dog training. So that was your biggest accomplishment. What's your biggest failure?
That's weird. I don't know. Sounds like a douche thing to be like, I'm having a hard time thinking of a failure. Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, it's weird because like every single thing I've learned has been on the back of a failure.
Right.
So some of like the best lessons I've ever like, dude, there's this thing, like all the safe place shit that I just said a minute ago about teaching dogs to socialize. Mm-hmm. That's like, sounds like this fucking really cool concept, but it's because dogs were just mauled in my presence as I tried to figure this shit out. You know what I mean? I was like, this will work. And then I'm like, oh God, it didn't fucking work. You know?
Right.
So like, every bit of knowledge I have, not every bit, some of it was taught to me by other people and I didn't have to suffer. They suffered and gave it to me. Right. But so much of the knowledge that I have is on the back of a mistake that I had to fix and learn the answer to. But the problem is I count those as learning moments, not failure moments, even though like I should count them as failures. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like that old stupid jiu-jitsu thing. You either win or you learn. You know what I mean?
Well, can I try to clarify that question just in case, just to try to get an answer out of it? Like if we could, not that that's not a good one, but has there been some failure or something that turned out the way you didn't want it to that you didn't learn from?
No, I would never, like to me, if something happened and you didn't learn from it, you did a fucking real serious disservice. Like the worst thing that could happen is not a bad thing happening. The worst thing that can happen is you didn't learn from the bad thing happening. Because bad shit happens, like left, right, and center. Dude, bad shit happens all fucking time. Like shit goes sideways all the time. That's not it's a problem. It's bad. It's regrettable, whatever, man. But life is full of shit. Like shit, terrible shit happens.
Right.
The shame is not that bad things happen. The shame is that you didn't grow from it. You didn't learn from it. Right. So like that's the fucking real shame. I've never had a mistake that I didn't learn something from. Because I will sit with it until I figure out a lesson that needed to be taken from it. Like I would not let it pass without learning.
Got it.
Legit. That said, I'm trying to think like mistakes. I don't know, man. Like I think if I could go back to stuff that I regret, it would be that explanations that I have now, I didn't have then. Mm-hmm. So like somebody needed to hear me say it a certain way, but I didn't have those words yet. And so like they didn't hear it. And so who knows, maybe I helped them, but maybe I could have helped them more. Maybe like I helped them, but it wasn't a long lasting change because they didn't truly understand, you know?
Totally. But every more experienced dog trainer we've had on has said exactly the same thing. You know, like you've heard the whole adage, like you can't buy experience, but it's expensive as hell to get it. Michael Ellis said I love that saying. Michael Ellis said, if I could go back and like resurrect the dogs that I learned on and apologize, I would.
I mean, for sure. Like if the regrettable thing is that I didn't have this all the time, you know what I mean? Like I wish that I did, you know, I wish that I knew.
Yeah.
But I mean, you can't sit around wishing, you know what I mean? You can't sit around upset. You have to move forward, you know?
Right.
I'm pretty good about taking that stuff. Like how I got into jiu-jitsu, I got my ass beat. I had a little martial arts school that I was running. Like I was renting space at this fitness center and teaching on like the racquetball court, like teaching, you know, whatever martial art I was doing before jiu-jitsu, right? Before judo, before any grappling at all.
Oh, you did judo too?
Yeah. And this dude came in and he was like on the Air Force judo team and wrestling team. So he was a badass. Mm-hmm. And he whooped my ass so bad, like old school challenge. Like, cause I totally believed I was that kid. I was that like, bro, you don't understand. Like you're not going to do that shit to me. You know, I bite and I eye gouge and I'll break your fingers. And I'm that fucking dude. And just just pinch my nose shut, like just humiliated me, like just trashed me.
He pinched your nose legitimately, or is that an expression?
Oh no, like pinched my nose shut so I couldn't breathe.
No shit.
Oh yeah. No, crazy. Man, I'll do it. I'll do it to you. I'll do it to you. I do it to everybody now.
reminds me of Bas Rutten's thing when he was on Joe Rogan's podcast. I won't waste time, but people can look up. It's like a quick 3-4 minute clip. Bas Rutten on Joe Rogan's podcast talking about the importance of understanding dominant positions.
Yeah, oh, man. Oh, it's brutal. Yeah. Anyway, this guy just trashed me. And I had a little jiu-jitsu. I mean, I didn't have jiu-jitsu. So I had a little martial arts school. And so, like, that's pretty embarrassing. Like, that's pretty bad. You know what I mean? To have some dude fuck you up in front of all your students. And this is what you're trying to do. And I was young. And I had to be, like, early 20s or something. You know? And so...
Humbled you.
Yeah, but my response to that was, I went, all right, cool. Where do you train? And he was like, I train at this place. And I went, cool. And, like, the next Monday night, I showed up with all of those guys. Mm-hmm. And I went, hey, I need...
That's amazing.
These guys have paid me to teach them how to fight, and I obviously don't know how. So can you take all of us as students and teach us all the stuff that you're doing? And I closed my gym and started training.
I fucking love
it. You know what I mean? So it's like, dude, I've always been the kid that I'm like, I'll take a beating. I don't have it. Like failures and shit like that. I'm never like, I'm not never, I'm human. But I don't let myself dwell on the like, oh, woe is me. I'm so fucked up over it. I'm like, okay, that was fucking horrible. What's the action plan? What can we take from this?
Maybe you're alluding to the answer to this question that we ask every single special guest. But what is a special tool that is unique to you? Right? A J-Jack that allows you the best dog to be the best dog trainer that you are.
I'm trying to think, cause there's several like little good nugget lessons that are good for people. But what could I say? Here's probably the most important thing that I could say, because dog training
that's
is
something that's authentic to you.
No, well, that's what I mean. Something like there's lessons of stoicism and emotional control and breathing and blah, 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 right. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there's a thing that I've said for years, and it's in all of my relationships. I mean, dogs and people, but dogs for sure. Like every individual dog, want for, not from. Like that's my mantra. Want for them, don't want from them. You know, I want for you to learn this skill so you can have the amazing life that a skill like this can give you. I don't want from you to do this skill so you can make me look good. I don't want from you, I want for you. You know, because the second I start wanting from, you start to get into some real fucked up territory. And if you can purely want for, you can see things more clear and you can be more pure about things. You know,
it's love ultimately. Like it's like embracing love for the animal.
Yeah. And the thing, for not from, you know, man. That's my relationship mantra. All relationships, great. My wife, my friends, my students, my dogs, everything.
Yeah, and that's why you're endeared by a lot of people, man. So it's I think you have a big heart and a big brain and a lot of life experience, big ears, a lot of stuff. But just genuinely from you know, I've had the pleasure of meeting you. We're gonna meet you again in 2 weeks from now. I had an amazing time with you. It's almost 3 hours on the clock now. But
yeah, dude, my ass is falling asleep. I gotta get off this thing.
Yeah.
Bro, Jay, I'm so sorry we kept you, but this has been a pleasure, man. I'm so looking forward to meeting with you.
Cool, man. It was good to
Thanks
talk to you guys.
For taking the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. My wife's on vacation, so I'm like, I'm sitting here at the house. I was like, man, I found out she was going somewhere with her mom. I was like, oh, sweet. That's when I'll do the fucking interview.
There you go.
Nice. Yeah, it'll be good to see you guys. And we'll train when you get up there. You train no gi, yeah?
I'd love that.
Gi and no gi. Yeah.
Sweet. I don't want to fucking pack.
I don't train at all. So
if you're not gonna pack a gi, then I won't either. Yeah.
I mean, if you need me to, I will. Then I'm not gonna not pack.
I don't need
it,
you. No, we can do whatever you want to do. It's all good.
Blake said the same thing.
Yeah, Blake. Yeah. 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 I'll bring some no gi stuff.
Yeah. Sweet. Yeah. I mean, dude. Again, like gi no gi. I don't fuck. Do you know what I mean? Like, if we get too close to a fucking.
No, but you're right though. Packing a gi is, you know, for what, you know.
If we get too close to a tablecloth, I'll choke you, but I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I really don't care. There's a dog bed sitting in my gym, and I legit have taken the blanket off the dog bed and choked the fuck out of people with it. No question.
Oh my
no God. Question. Holy yeah, shit. Yeah. Yeah, we don't play. All right.
right, everybody, we want to thank J-Jack again. This is season 2, episode 10, and we had an amazing conversation. We talked about a lot more than we had written down here. So again, thank you so much for joining us, J-Jack. Again, my name is Brent, and that guy over there is Mariana Alvarez and Mr. J-Jack from Next Level Dogs. We will see you guys next time in episode 11, season 2. Peace.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast, a podcast created by dog trainers for dog trainers or anyone who's ever fallen in love with man's best friend.
We really hope that you enjoyed this episode and can't wait to be back with you guys. Be sure to follow us at Dog Trainers Podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And don't forget to punch the hell out of that subscribe button and leave us a review.
Remember, guys, this is your podcast. You're the best listeners in the world, and we'll see you next time.